It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com. Now broadcasting live from Radio Row in Las Vegas ahead of the big game. Here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome in, everyone, and I am sitting next to the gloss, Carla Dawson. I've got Sean Mapes behind the glass. Carla, last time I saw you, you were walking the streets of Vegas. Last week's Radio Row coverage.
That. I don't know about that.
You were out there. In fact, you look like you had a great time in Vegas.
We had a great time, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We were walking the halls of Mandalay Bay and into the media row and all of that, and it was great fun. I have to laugh at the promo, though, like I do feel like I'm still back in pre-Super Bowl week.
It takes a few days to detox from Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And all that entails, the people, the noise, the excitement, the lights, the shows, the gambling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was a big week in Vegas.
It was a big week, but it was really fun. We had a great time. And we had so many guests. You know, I thought what was the most fun, and I don't know how this happened in Vegas, but I felt like we always have guests on Media Row. That's kind of what we do. But this time it felt like to me, and I'd love to get your take on this, David, like we made friends with our guests. It was like a living room on our little set in Vegas. I thought it was, think of all the people we connected with. It was so fun.
A great group of guests, great quality people, very insightful.
Lots of
they were all articulate. I think they liked you better than they liked me,
but that's true.
For another day, another story. It was absolutely fabulous. You're absolutely right. When people like Matt Ryan sit down, his knowledge of football and his ability to break down the game was really fun. And it was great to visit with him and Darren Woodson.
I saw later.
Oh, that's right. You saw him out in the town a little later.
He's like, Carla, I'm like, Darren, how are you, my friend? I mean, it was just the best. And even with Matt Ryan, I love that you brought that up. When he came to our set, you know, we got him all situated. And within a couple minutes of our talking to him, he sat back. He put his foot over his knee, kind of like leaned forward. Like, you know, he really relaxed. We had such a fun time. It was, I don't know, that was interesting. We've never had so many, what I felt like living room chats.
Yeah, living room chats, off the record chats, friendly chats, collegial, forthcoming chats. Really, really great week of interviews there. And then what a Sunday evening it was when we think about all the various elements. Let's take this sort of high-level view of everything that happened. I mean, yes, it was in Vegas.
Which that in itself is wild.
Well, it's wild that it landed there, particularly for a league that has shunned gambling and wanted to stiff-arm any association with gambling. And now they've had a team move there, your beloved Raiders, to Allegiant Stadium, and they hosted a Super Bowl in Vegas, the home of gambling. A city notorious for gambling. So clearly, there's no more concern with the NFL about gambling.
No, they're all in. In fact, you know what was expected to be bet on the Super Bowl yesterday? $23 billion.
Unbelievable.
And approximately 68 million adults were going to combine for the Super Bowl bets. That is 25% of the adults in the United States.
Well,
like those numbers are astounding.
They are. What was striking to me is that I believe the line held with the 49ers giving away 2 points up till kickoff. Yet everyone I talked to, their quick answer was, I cannot bet against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Everyone we talked to
thought Patrick Mahomes could win this game. And you know what? He actually did. Everybody thought, well, it will be close. The 49ers have a better roster. But in the end, Patrick will be Patrick and the 49ers will lose. And yet they were still favored by two. There was a lot of easy money if people had placed the bets where they were claiming they felt.
If they put their money where their mouth was.
That's the point. Yeah.
And you know what was interesting? I really loved Christopher Mad Dog Russo's take last week before the game. It was, you know what? I'm just going to be honest. I've got Chiefs fatigue. I'm over it. Like, I want the 49ers. I know it's going to be the Chiefs, but I've just got Chief fatigue.
Yeah.
And I thought, hey, hallelujah, you're being honest about it. Good for you.
Well, maybe that sent some sentiment to the 49ers. Hard to say.
Yeah.
But so much on that Sunday night. I mean, certainly Vegas added some sizzle to it. Shoot, you had Taylor Swift in there. And, of course, she got lots of attention from the camera, as she always does. And a big post-game kiss, although not the proposal that some had suggested.
Right, including me.
But there was that moment when they were walking together post-game and the cameras were on them. It would have been perfect if he had dropped to a knee, but he did not. Yet.
Right. No, okay, it didn't happen in the aftermath. That's right.
We had a fight between Travis Kelce and his coach, which was very untoward. It was not to be. And he pushed his head coach, who's 65 years old. An unbelievable moment. Not something you see every day in a Super Bowl.
He put hands on his head coach.
Hard to
defend. We're gonna have to unpack that one later. Got a lot to it.
You had two great teams. One of them has the Michael Jordan of football, as he's been dubbed this week. And I think out of this game, there was the birth of a dynasty. It's hard to say they are not a dynasty by however you measure that. We had a great comeback, controversial coaching decisions. That all needed to be part of the whole scheme there. A freak injury. I mean, Dre Greenlaw, did you see what happened?
Oh, my gosh.
That was so tragic.
Talk about that, because I think it's really, unfortunate.
Of course, Dre Greenlaw is a standout linebacker for the 49ers. They need him in there.
Wow,
and
he really is.
It was just a jog back onto the field, and he collapsed to the ground.
Yep.
Unbelievable to see that happen for somebody who's such a fine-tuned athlete and has been tearing around all over the field, that just a slight jog onto the field would send him to his knees with a torn Achilles. How tragic is that? And there's a guy who fought hard to get his team to the Super Bowl, and then he didn't get to finish the game.
Well, and you know, I heard things, people talking about how common these Achilles injuries are getting to be with an aging population of athletes. You look at Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson in the NBA. You looked at Aaron Rodgers, four plays into the season this year with the Jets. You looked at Dre Greenlaw, the same thing. And I think what it highlighted to me, it was so sad to see, is that look at last year, San Francisco's NFC Championship game versus Philadelphia. They were dropping like flies.
That's right.
That's how Brock Purdy came to be. I mean, it was such a disaster. I mean, it was just, they could barely field a team.
And they didn't have a quarterback at all.
Right.
I mean, you just don't win in this league without somebody.
Right.
I mean, Brock Purdy is good, but I mean, if you don't have Brock Purdy, then he's, oh my gosh, the guy we can't live without. And he was a guy they couldn't live without in that game.
Right. And you know, remember a couple seasons ago, the same thing happened to San Francisco. They lost so many players. It was about 3 years ago, because they had just lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl with Jimmy G having a 10-point lead also. And then that following season, when they were supposed to be great, injury, where they were terrible. And it was like they were down to third strings and picking people up. And I think there are franchises that just are snake bit, and there are franchises that have fairy dust, and the Chiefs have the fairy dust.
Mm.
I mean, that Dre Greenlaw thing that you talked about last night, that is so, it's nobody's fault. That is just incredible bad luck.
So bad luck. And I just felt bad for the guy. You could tell he was heartbroken not to go back on the field. He'd worked his whole career to get to that game, and then he was unable to play. Other things about that game that just were amazing. We had two record-setting field goals. I mean, one by the 49ers and one by the Chiefs, right back-to-back. It was just amazing that the kickers were so good that day.
They were so good. And it was a lot. It was a field goal game. Mm-hmm. For pretty much the first half.
Yeah, first half was pretty sloppy.
Wow.
Really rugged. We were waiting for somebody to break through. And so some kind of electricity there. And it was it was a very sloppy first half.
And you had Butker, who's quite a veteran and very experienced and seasoned. And Moody, who's a rookie. And really, for the most part, except for one PAT that literally could have changed the entire outcome.
A very important PAT by the 49ers did cost them late. That was a really big setback for the 49ers.
And his only miss all season. I mean, wow. But this stage is different. All bets are off. When you're at the big game,
his kick was low. And his kick was low. Therefore.
It really was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Then
still taking it all in.
There was a streaker, one of your favorite things, right?
From California. Now, we're all about it.
You weren't born when streaking was a big phenomenon in the early 70s.
True.
But when I remember streaking in the early 70s, people were totally naked. I mean, this guy was running around with his shirt off. Not very exotic. If Sean Mapes had been doing it, he'd be buck naked without a stitch of clothing.
And they wouldn't have pulled him off. They would have brought Usher to run right alongside Sean.
That would have been the halftime show.
goes Sean again.
I will say, though, if you're going to have a Super Bowl in Vegas, like you said, the NFL has avoided the seediness of Vegas. You got to strip down. Yeah. You can't.
Well, Usher
if
did.
Anywhere, if Usher anywhere did. Else, I don't even think it's a crime in Las Vegas to be naked in public. But I was disappointed in the streaker. Very disappointed in the streaker.
Okay, fair. I love that.
But it is such
Sean.
A strange phenomenon. Look, I don't know what that streaker paid, but the ticket price must have been $7,000 or something. So you spend $7,000, and then you find your way out of the stadium by running out onto the field and streaking around. You know your exit, right? And you spent all that money to get to be there.
It must have been a Niners fan. He saw the fate. He knew it was coming.
He knew it was coming, evidently.
Thought, might as well get my money's worth.
And then, of course, we had at halftime Usher and Friends, a big bevy of performers. What did you think of the show?
I loved it. I thought it was so cool. I loved all the costume changes, the roller skates. That was amazing. Now, I thought it was really cool.
Well, we had been told last week in Vegas that Usher would be the primary party performing. But did you have a sense that some of these other folks were going to turn around?
No.
Like Alicia Keys showing up? And I mean, it was a pretty good turnout, and it was fun to see the baton being passed around on that performance.
Yeah, I loved when Ludacris came out. It was really cool. Alicia Keys is amazing. Sean, who was your favorite?
I mean, I really like Ludacris and Lil Jon.
Yeah, Lil Jon was the one that surprised me.
Especially closing it out like that. Like, that's how you have to close it out. You can't start with that. You have to end with the absolute, going nuts song.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I thought it was awesome. One of the best.
Well, we're going to close out this segment with that last word. And when we come back, we're going to look at the Chiefs, Mahomes' greatness, and Coach Reid's ascendance after he left the Eagles. That will be up next year on Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And when we went to break, we were talking about Patrick Mahomes. And
are you catching this Usher?
Oh, yes. We
look
got
at
a little
Sean
Usher.
Mapes. Half he does time, not mess around.
He made a presence there, did he not, at halftime?
Yeah.
Everybody liked him.
I love it. It's great. It's really great. Well, nice, Sean. That makes my day.
Well, speaking of great, we've got Patrick Mahomes now with back-to-back Super Bowl championships, and it's actually his third championship dating back to his first one over
in
San Francisco.
Years,
yeah. Yeah, 5 years ago at Hard Rock Stadium when the Chiefs defeated the 49ers 31-20. Last night it was 25-22. You know, one sidebar, everybody talks about how Chris Berman always seems to make a good prediction about the Super Bowl.
He's predicted 5 of the last 6.
Well, he was very close this time. I mean, he got the right winner.
Yep, 30-27.
He said 30-27 Chiefs over 49ers, and of course it was 25-22. So he was not far off. Yet again, you got to give it to
Berman.
He had
the point spread right, too. Yeah, amazing.
He's pretty good. But now the Chiefs 2 in a row here, and then 3 out of the last 5 years. And Mahomes is on an incredible run, as everybody likes to point out. He's one of the few people, he's the only person in NFL history in his first 7 years to have won 3 championships and 2 MVPs. No one in the NFL has ever done that. And so he stands apart, at least with those monikers.
Yeah. And I think what we talked about earlier in our production meeting, I think, is just really something to note that, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is great and his greatness is on display. But, you know, when you look at something like the Chiefs' regular season, It was a very un-Chief type of season. They led the league in drops. They led the league in penalties. They lost to the Raiders on Christmas Day. I mean, let's talk about this. But when it gets to the postseason, it's a different animal. And they're phenomenal. And it's because of Patrick Mahomes. And he's got so many measurable talents, yes, as we see. But he also has that intangible, that extra gear that you can't coach it, you can't teach it, you just have it. Brady had it. You did not want the ball in Brady's hands with 30 seconds left and the Patriots behind.
Time and time again, he would take his team right down the field to get the winning score.
Exactly. Same with Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. You did not want the ball in his hands with your leading by 2 with 0.2 seconds on the clock. He was going to drain it. Same thing with Steph Curry. Those are 3 like legends that they just have a gear, and there's no explaining it, and there's no measuring it. You just know, keep the ball out of their hands. And Mahomes is that guy.
So it's interesting. You go back to the regular season. Yes, they did not have a great regular season by their standard. They struggled. And interestingly, yes, one of their notable defeats was to the Raiders, your team. And what was telling, I don't know if you saw it, but Andy Reid wrote a text to Anthony Pierce saying, thanks for that walloping because we needed it. And it focused them. It got them back on track. Andy Reid really believed that was a loss that was a bit of a turning point for the Chiefs this season.
You know what? I am just tired of my Raiders being that nice to the Chiefs because 3 years ago, the Chiefs were off to a pitiful start. And then they came to Allegiant Stadium, which was my first trip to Allegiant, and handed the Raiders, Derek Carr-led Raiders, their booty on a platter and turned the whole damn season around. I'm actually, quite frankly, sick of being their whipping boy. Look, come on, Raiders. Antonio Pierce, you got to turn this thing around.
Well, it was
stop
a great
saving
day for
the Chiefs
Raiders,
season.
But it, apparently a better day for the Chiefs, yeah, according to Andy Reid. But no, Mahomes is exceptional. And look, it's hard to find new ways to describe his greatness.
Mm-hmm.
But it is just, I'd say two things. One is, during the regular season, it felt like he was playing to develop his team. He would throw the ball to receivers who were dropping them, but he had a belief that we're going to keep running these plays, we're going to keep throwing to these guys, and eventually they're going to start catching. So it was a little bit developmental during the course of the season. But once they got into the playoffs, it was over-the-top good for Mahomes. I mean, he had one interception in all the postseason. It was the very bad throw he made last night in the big game. And he would
only a second turnover.
Yeah, I'd love to have that one back. But his postseason performance was stellar throughout, and he really is set apart in that regard. This is why when the 49ers left him that last drive in overtime, and there was only a three-point game, and Mahomes had four down territory on every
stupidity
element. I just thought, no, you've got to remember whom you're playing against. And if you're the 49ers and you're driving down the field and you're going to settle for a field goal and allow him four down territory to go a whole distance of the field to score seven, I don't like my odds. And I don't think anybody did. And that you have to remember whom you're playing against. And they were playing against Patrick Mahomes. And
this isn't the first time. This happened 4 years ago. Kyle Shanahan versus Andy Reid. 49ers with a 10-point lead, and they lost. So this script, this is not even like, oh, wow, we've never seen it before. You've seen it before, and you were on the other end of it. He is, in all four Super Bowl appearances, the only loss being the whooping by Brady and the Bucks.
Yep.
But all four, the Chiefs have been at a 10-point deficit. There is no surprise, and there's no guesswork at what Mahomes can do. So I don't know what Shanahan was thinking. And the only other overtime game in the Super Bowl was when Shanahan was the OC in Atlanta and blew the 28-3 lead to the Patriots. So I feel for Shanahan, but there's been a lot of learning opportunities. And this was a revenge game from 4 years before. You've seen this play out. You know what can happen.
So I want to come back and unpack Shanahan's decision-making in another segment. I want to stick with the Chiefs for just a minute.
Got it.
Mahomes, so extraordinary. Andy Reid now is being mentioned as maybe the greatest coach of all time. I mean, recency bias is a good thing for Andy Reid right now because people are forgetting what Bill Belichick did over his career. And Reid is climbing the charts here on wins. But look at this. It was not always easy for him. And when we talk about Kyle Shanahan and his frustrations and losses in big games, once to the Falcons in the Super Bowl, and he's not been able to win the big one, when we consider that, we have to remember Andy Reid was in this same boat not that long ago when he was fired by the Eagles.
No, it's so true. And I would want Dan Campbell and Kyle Shanahan to sit down and listen to Andy Reid's story. Because they forget, because he's been so good for so long with Kansas City. There's a very storied part of his coaching career that's really important. When he was with the Eagles, he went to the NFC Championship game three consecutive years, 2001, 2, and 3. Lost every single one. He was consistently, can you imagine the Philly fans? Called a choker by the fans, by the media. He was labeled the coach who could never win the big game. It wasn't until 2004, 4 years later, that he finally broke through by beating Atlanta, funny enough, to Kyle Shanahan. ultimately losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. But that was, you know, now look where he is. So I say Dan Campbell. You had a rough year this year at the end, the beautiful season. Kyle, this is now your third collapse. Okay, so Reed had three before he hit it. It's kind of four strikes and you're out. So don't be discouraged. I mean, take these as learning opportunities.
It has happened to some of the best coaches, mm-hmm. lots of near misses. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go even back to Tom Landry. The Cowboys were a team that couldn't get breakthroughs. And then once they broke through and they had Roger Staubach at quarterback, they got too deep into the playoffs every year. Super Bowl victories, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we've seen this narrative before, and of course, it feels a little more heightened right now because of the microwave analysis of today's media.
Yeah.
There's always huge, sweeping conclusions. Oh, he can't win the big one. He just cannot, and he never will. Well, that's not always true.
Use it as ammo. That's
right.
What I say.
Well,
use
maybe
it as
that's
ammo.
Right. It can be motivation, but today it's got to feel pretty disheartening to be beat up and on the short end of the stick of this loss.
100%. I mean, I think that this one's going to really hurt because this is like a deja vu from 4 years ago.
Okay, so Andy Reid overcame his rough days with the Eagles.
And how? You mentioned the same thing with Tom Landry. Once he got Roger Staubach, how did Andy Reid overcome it? Once he got Patrick Mahomes. So there's something to
that. Mahomes certainly helped. Certainly, Belichick wasn't the same without Brady. That pairing is essential. Now, one thing, it's curious to see if Andy Reid gets over this one, but he was hit.
Oh, Lord.
He was pushed, at least, by Travis Kelce, his star tight end, who was yelling in his face in the middle of that game. I've not quite seen something like that in a long time in the NFL, and certainly not on the big stage like the Super Bowl, and with a player of his stature and following. I mean, there's, if you didn't know Travis Kelce a month ago, you certainly know who he is now.
Oh, gosh. Well, we've known him all season. In a vaccine commercial, a Campbell Soup commercial, or this commercial, or that commercial. Oh, yeah, and he has a girlfriend that's kind of famous, too. Oh, yeah, we saw her all night last night. In fact, at the winning touchdown, it went right to her. I'm quite not sure why, because it wasn't Kelce that ran it in, and she wasn't on the field, so I don't know why we were there.
Well, they didn't
anyway.
Show her when he pushed his head coach. Suddenly, we didn't go
kidding.
See Taylor then.
We do need to come back and unpack that, though. That's a fascinating, fascinating thing to talk about, I think.
All right. Well, we are poised for a break, and when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Chris Dishman. Many would remember he played 13 NFL seasons, most of them with the Houston Oilers. It'll be Chris Dishman up next. He's now the new head coach at Texas Southern University. Chris Dishman up next. We'll have him break down the Super Bowl.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios,
here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. We're now going to go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. This guest line is sponsored by Progressive. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $750 on average. Okay, joining us here is 13-year NFL veteran Chris Dishman, who is now the head coach of Texas Southern University. Chris, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Thank you for having me, David and Carla. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great, and congrats, Chris. That's pretty exciting, leading those Tigers.
Yeah, it is very exciting. You know, every time you go out, and when I start coaching, I always wanted to be a head coach, and then my dream came true 21 days ago.
Well, that is – so we're talking to you less than 1 month in. Wow.
Less than 1 month in, yes.
And so, what was it about Texas Southern that made you want to take that job?
It's just that – I feel like I can make a difference. Mm-hmm. I feel like that I could be a good leader for the young men that's over there. And like I tell people, why not Texas Southern? I think Texas Southern job is sitting in the heartbeat of Texas. And why not take a job that's sitting in the heartbeat of Texas? Of Houston, rather, not Texas, of Houston.
We are talking to Chris Dishman, who's been named the new head coach of Texas Southern University. So, Chris, I wanted to ask you, because obviously most people don't really know what it entails to be a head coach of a university football program. And boy, it seems from afar that the world has changed radically with NIL and transfer portal and almost perpetual recruiting. You're recruiting high school classes and you're recruiting current players to stay and recruiting people through the transfer portal. Walk us through what these first 21 days has been like and how you're getting your hands around all these responsibilities that are a part of the job.
Well, first and foremost, you got to take care of home. You got to take care of the players who's there with you. So that's first and foremost. I reached out to the players that was there, who's on campus, who's going to be the main. The majority of people there is going to help us win a lot of football games. So I took care of home first. Then I went out and visited other people home, start with the high school. Then we went to the transfer portal. You know, Texas Southern, we're going to offer you a great education. We're going to offer you a great chance to show what you can do on a football field. You know, so we're NIL deals, we're not going to try to get involved in that right now. We're just going to try to make young men better.
This is exactly why you just were named the head coach, Chris. That's amazing because, you know what, this is what college football is. So much chaos right now, and I know out of chaos comes order, but it's people like you who have been there, done that. You've been the man in the arena, and here you are. You can lead these men not only as an incredible leader yourself, but as a former player, you really understand what they're going through, and I'm really happy for you, and I'm really happy for your players. So I think it's going to be an exciting year for you and the Tigers.
Yeah, it is. It's already been exciting. You know, we've been having these guys up at 5 o'clock in the morning already working out, getting on the grass. You know, and some is different. Change is good. And like I tell them all, come over here with a smile. Come over here mad like we're forcing you to work out. Because we're not forcing no one to work out. You chose this position. You chose this. You chose to be a student-athlete. And student-athletes, that's what you have to do. You have to get up sometimes 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, work out, then go to class, then come back and do study hall and do different stuff like that. That's the profession you've chosen. So if you don't want to be that, then just be a regular student. I'm not saying that regular students is bad, but a student-athlete takes a lot more. It takes a lot more of being a student-athlete than just a regular student.
We're talking to Chris Dishman, a two-time Pro Bowler in the NFL. Chris, when I think about your career, I think of your playing for the Oilers. Of course, we sit here in Houston. But you had a stint with the Chiefs as well. Were you cheering for the Chiefs, and how did it feel to see their great run of success?
Of course, I've always, you know, like I said, I'm an Oiler, I'm a Viking, I'm a Chief, I'm a Redskin. So I'm four teams that I have running through my blood. And anytime I can see those teams winning, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy for the Tennessee Titans. I'm happy for the Houston Texans. I'm happy for the Kansas City Chiefs of going through the Super Bowls and winning because I feel like I'm a part of all four organizations.
Well, Chris, you're part of even more than that because your assistant coaching resume has the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Chargers, Menlo College, Baylor, and IMG Academy. I mean, you have done it at every level. That is really incredible. What was your favorite? What was one of your favorite landing spots in that very long list?
Well, I think IMG Academy, where I was able to mold young men at the high school level. You know, there was very everybody at the high school level want to be exactly where I just came from. That's in professional football. And every young man's dream is to go pro. Everybody want to go pro. Everybody want to play professional. But as I told those young men, it's only 3% go professional.
Wow.
And where do the other 97% go? Do people ever stop and think, where happened to the other 97% guys? So that's the gentleman that I'm worried about. I'm not worried about the 3% because the 3% is able to jump higher, run faster, block better, and control longer than anybody else. So those 3% will be okay. But what we as a society forget is those 97% is not going to be okay.
So true.
So that's why I have a program we're going to be starting in the spring that every player on the Texas Southern has to have 24 hours of community service a month. You have to go and follow someone. If you're in business, are you into radio or sports broadcasting or broadcasting or journalists, then you have to go and follow someone and shadow them for a day or two. So that therefore you make sure that's what you want to do. Because some people pick a major and they'll say, this is my major, I'm going to pick with it, but I really don't want to do it. But until you find out what hard work go through journalists, what hard work go through broadcasting, you know, I'm sure you guys up at 4:35 o'clock too, getting your stories ready and doing stuff like that. And a lot of people don't understand what hard work it takes to do that. They just think you guys get up in the morning, look wonderful, and say the right things.
I have a face for radio, Chris. They're keeping me off the camera.
She looks wonderful.
No, but you know what? That's so great because you're giving them a path. The majority of them are not going to go on to the level that you played at in the NFL. And give them a path where they can be productive, great leaders in society. I mean, that's what is better than that? I mean, that's fantastic.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I think it's very important as a whole to people to realize that there's 97% of these guys after if you play in college. Ball, they're not going to go pro. So what are they going to do? So in order to make them better fathers, brothers, and uncles, then we have to take care of them.
We're talking to Chris Dishman. So, Chris, I want to ask you about the Houston Texans. Obviously, played for the Oilers, and you're here in Houston. The Texans had a breakout season. It was sort of interesting this morning. I think it was Dan Orlovsky was saying that when he looks at the AFC next year, certainly the Chiefs are the team to beat, but he says, watch out for Houston. And it almost kicked me off my feet because I just don't...
We're not used to that.
Not used to that. The Texans have been in such a drought, but what a breakthrough season they had this year. What's the ceiling for this team next year?
Well, they've got a great coach. They've got a quarterback. People don't realize that quarterbacks... If you have a good quarterback, you can win a lot of games. You know, it's
we saw it last night.
All right. If you got a good quarterback, you can win a lot of games. And they've got a good quarterback, a good coach over there. And they're building our traditions. You know, they're building a culture. And so if you can build a culture, then that will work. And that's what I'm trying to do at Texas Southern, build a culture.
Well, and I know,
and
too.
And people throw that word around. We're building a culture. We're building this. They throw it around like it's not nothing, but it's the meaning behind of building a culture.
No, I think that's where change is really made. Because X's and O's, yes, that's one thing. But if you don't have a culture, it doesn't matter what your X's and O's look like. It's not going to happen. And so that's great of you to realize that. And I know you can be an agent for change.
Yeah, you know, some people are afraid of change. I've challenged my young men over there. Don't be afraid of change. Accept change. Accept change and see how you can fit in. Because not everyone over there can fit in change. You know, some may feel like they don't want to do the right thing. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. Some of them may feel like they have a fixed mindset and not a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. I'm all about having a player have a growth mindset. So therefore, he can be able to be a leader, not a follower.
Chris, I know you participated in the NFL Minority Coaching Fellowship Program with a couple different teams. If you look at this last coaching cycle, hiring cycle, 50% of the new head coaches are minorities, and Antonio Pierce, Raheem Morris, Gerard Mayo, and Dave Canales. 4 minority hiring in one cycle, it's an NFL record. How do you feel about that? Are they making progress, and what needs to happen going forward?
First of all, I love the minority hiring, and I think minority hiring is good for the NFL. But most of all, you name some guys who can coach.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they got hired because they're a minority.
Agreed.
I think they got hired because they are good coaches. You know, so if you're a minority and you can coach, then you should be the guy.
Well, we know that you are going to be a great coach for Texas Southern University. Chris Dishman, thank you so much for joining us today.
We wish you the best.
Thank
Go
you
Tigers.
Guys for having me. Appreciate it. Yes, indeed.
Listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And the 49ers fall again to the Chiefs last night. And we were talking about Kyle Shanahan and his history in big games. And it's been a struggle, right? He lost to this same Chief team, 5 years ago in the Super Bowl?
4 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 31-20, the final there. And then, of course, this loss, and then you go way back, you've got the 28-3 lead where he was the offensive coordinator for the Falcons,
Super Bowl 51 here in Houston.
Tom Brady came back here in Houston.
You were at the game.
I was at that game. It was just an unbelievable turn of events. But his history in some of these games has been a struggle. Look, for a coach who's been very successful and by all accounts is an upper echelon coach in the NFL, his track record in some of these big games is sort of frustrating.
It really is. And it's too bad because he really is a brilliant offensive mind. He really is. And a great coach. And obviously he gets a production out of his players. I mean, look at Brock Purdy. I mean, he's Mr. Irrelevant, as we all know. And he really played great yesterday. Really, it's just that his counterpart played phenomenal.
Yep.
And that's the difference in it. But I think, you know, I think the pattern that I see from these three losses that we're talking about, big losses on Kyle Shanahan's resume in Atlanta, and then the two losses as San Francisco's head coach against the Chiefs, he seems to abandon the run in all three of them when the run is what had gotten them to a lead in the first place. Love your thoughts on that.
Well, that was certainly true in that 28-3 comeback, Tom Brady leading the Patriots on a comeback over Kyle Shanahan's Falcons. And look, Kyle was the offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn was the head coach. But that was a failure on the part of the Falcons, both offensively and defensively. Defensively, obviously, Quinn allowed Brady to move up and down the field and score the points. But offensively, the Falcons' offense did abandon the run in that game and therefore didn't chew up a lot of clock, which enabled Brady the time to come back and win that game in overtime. Now, that was a long time ago.
The only two overtime Super Bowls were at the feet of Kyle Shanahan,
both times. It's got to be devastating to him.
Gosh.
So there is that 28-3 comeback by Tom Brady, where I do think Shanahan deserves some scrutiny about the abandoning the run then. When you have that big of a lead, don't you run the ball to try to chew up the clock? The Falcons, for the most part, did not. They paid the price. The Patriots came back. Then you look at yesterday. That third quarter was a head-scratcher. That was the quarter when the 49ers really had some chances, because out came the Chiefs in the second half.
They were leading by 10 at that point.
Yeah, okay, so 49ers leading by 10. Here come the Chiefs. They are really poised to try to close this gap. And, I mean, the 49er defense was really extraordinary in that third quarter. Mm-hmm. They kept stopping the Chiefs, and yet the 49er offense couldn't muster anything. And they were three and out. And there were a lot of passes in that window. McCaffrey didn't get the ball for three drives there in the three quarters. Why not? I mean, McCaffrey had a lot of productivity in the game, but they abandoned him in that stretch, in that very, very critical stretch when it seemed that it was a stretch when it seemed like the 49ers could have put the Chiefs away but failed to do so.
And I think that's what lost it. I think the third quarter lost it for them. Yeah. I really do. And when you have CMC on your roster and you're not, I mean, I say you're not using him. When I heard this morning that he had 30 touches last night, I was like, what? Because I thought, oh, wow, they didn't even use him when they should have towards the end.
Yep.
30 touches is a lot.
Yep.
That is a lot.
No, 30 touches, 22 carries, 8 receptions, 80 yards, both rushing and catching. So 160 total yards on the part of CMC.
But he's not the only running back on the roster. So come on.
They had other options to hand the ball to somebody else in that third quarter, and yet they continued to pass. And so, yes, if you want to say there's a tendency on his part to forget what got him there, abandon the run, and start passing the ball to the detriment of the team, that might be a recurring theme and something he needs to consider as he thinks about another shot and another Super Bowl opportunity.
Yes, because the last Super Bowl win for San Francisco was in 1994. Mm-hmm. That's a long time ago. Yep. That's 30 years ago.
Yep.
And this is the third consecutive loss for them.
Right.
You know, that's really tough. And in the Kyle Shanahan era, in regular season and playoffs, he is 0-4 versus Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you know, Travis Kelce made this comment yesterday in his locker room speech. We had the formula. We know how to go and get it, and they don't.
Mm.
And while that is brutal, it is every bit the truth.
Well, there's no mystery that the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes have the it factor. They do quote, how to go get it, as Travis Kelce says. I mean, I think everybody thought that last fourth quarter or the last drive, the overtime drive, here comes Patrick and here he goes. I mean, it's that inevitability that you felt with Brady. In fact, I'm reminded now you're talking about it. That Super Bowl, which was Tom Brady and the Patriots defeating the Falcons 28-3 game. It was 28-3 at the half. I was at the game, as you've noted. I was sitting amongst Falcon fans. And, of course, they were elated at halftime because it was 28-3 and things looked great for the Falcons. They couldn't even believe the fans were so excited for how well the Falcons were playing and having this big lead. But then it was sort of even just midway through third quarter when Brady started to move the Patriots up and down the field. The Falcons fans, where I was sitting, they went stone silent. You could just feel like there was a sense of inevitability that they felt like, oh, my gosh, we're watching this happen to us and we don't know anything to do. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to stop it. You could feel it even when the gap was still pretty big. And may remember, in the fourth quarter of that game, Brady had to leave two drives that were touchdowns with two-point conversions. It was 16 points he had to overcome to tie the game and send it into overtime. And even with that 16-point hurdle,
remember this
Falcons
like it was
fans
yesterday.
Were very, 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 very nervous because of the sense of inevitability with Tom Brady. Well, you have the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. You felt it last night that when overtime came and Patrick only, well, for a touchdown, he was going to win the game. There was this feeling in the air. Yes, he can take those Chiefs down, and he would make it happen.
Well, and another thing to add to this is not only the greatness of Tom Brady and the greatness we're seeing right now in modern day of Pat Mahomes. Think about the greatness of Bill Belichick and Andy Reid. When you're going into the locker at halftime, Bill Belichick was, because I haven't seen it recently, the king of halftime adjustments. It didn't matter, like you noted, a 28-3 deficit at the half, and it ended up being a Patriots win, the biggest comeback ever in Super Bowl history. Last night, I was watching the game with my daughter in an airport bar. Fun. And it was fun with her. But she said, oh, Mom, this is so good for you, because I was rooting for the 49ers. I said, no, you don't understand. Andy Reid is excellent at halftime adjustments. And while Kyle Shanahan is a really great coach, he got out-coached. This is Andy Reid. He's been there, done that, and succeeded at that level. And I think there is something to the coaches as well. Andy Reid was the better coach.
It reminds me a little bit of when Sean McVay and Jared Goff and the Rams were facing Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. You had the young upstart, very offensive-minded coach versus the iconic one in Bill Belichick. And Belichick definitely outcoached Sean McVay that day. McVay said, oh, yeah, I got schooled by Belichick. He said that after the game, which is a rare admission, frankly. Coaches don't like to say it that bluntly. But McVay was quite forthcoming to note that Belichick had outcoached him, and Belichick had created a defensive scheme that disrupted McVay's ability to tell Goff what to run each play based on what Belichick's defense was showing. And Belichick got all that figured out and shut down the Rams and went on to win. And it felt a little bit like that today, that in the end, Andy Reid had something over Kyle Shanahan, some kind of experience set, some kind of poise, some kind of perspective that comes from having coached many, many, many of these big games.
And many, many, many at a deficit. The Chiefs typically start out very slow. And like I mentioned, of all four Super Bowl appearances that they have been in, they have had at least a 10-point deficit. So they know that that's nothing for them.
Well, and that's when Travis Kelce says, we know what it takes. The formula. They don't lose their poise when they get behind. They just double down and they put the ball in Patrick's hands.
Well, he did lose his poise.
Again,
for the second time this season.
Yep.
And, you know, I want to say about that, I know that because they won, everyone's like, oh, that was not a big deal. And Andy Reid's saying, I love his passion, this and this. If they lost, and Travis Kelce being a leader on that team, he and Patrick Mahomes are the leaders of that team, bar none. That's a different story we're talking about. And what I want to tell Travis is that, hey, you're in our living rooms, on our radios, in our Twitter feeds. You're everywhere. Your face, your voice, your girlfriend, your everything. And you know what? You're a role model to little kids. And what are you showing them? It's cool to lay hands on your coach when you don't get what you want. And you can do that, and it's okay because you win in the end. I don't like that message.
Bad look for Travis Kelce pushing his boss, no question.
Ooh, man.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Ryan Leaf, and we'll get his insights on last night's game. Ryan Leaf, of course, a former Heisman finalist and number two overall pick in the 1998 draft. It will be Ryan Leaf up next here on Sports Map Radio.